I think one of the things that associations as a favorable future could be doing is looking for ways to enable not only the cooperation that helps to solve problems, but the real collaboration that builds new possibilities.
Hi, I'm Christine Shaw, CEO and President of Naylor Association Solutions, and I'm your host of the Association Advisor Podcast. We'll learn from successful association executives, partners, and clients on how to create a thriving, prosperous, and value-driven association. I invite you to join me in keeping informed and, most importantly, keeping your association profitable. Our goal is to leave you feeling inspired, more confident, and more knowledgeable. This is the Association Advisor Podcast. Welcome to Season 3 of the Association Advisor Podcast, brought to you by Naylor Association Solutions. I'm your host, Christine Shaw. This season, we're asking one big question: what is the future of associations? We'll be exploring the strategies that will keep your association relevant and thriving well into the future. To kick things off, I'm joined by Jeff DeCagna, Executive Advisor for Foresight First. You may remember Jeff from his appearance on Season 2. Jeff has spent more than 3 decades in the association world, and he's not afraid to challenge us to think differently. In our conversation, Jeff raises some tough but necessary questions. How can organizations adapt to new realities? And can we recapture the original purpose of associations, solving problems together and creating true human connection in a world where uncertainty is pulling us apart? You'll learn how associations can approach the future with intention, adaptability, and a renewed sense of humanity. I can't think of a better way to kick the season off, so let's dive right in. Welcome, Jeff. I am so excited to have you back on Season 3 of the Association Advisor Podcast.
Thank you, Christine. It's a pleasure to be back with you.
Well, with all your work, especially with focusing on the future of associations, you are absolutely the perfect person to help us look ahead to the future of associations. But before we do that, can you set the stage for us? Tell us a little bit why associations exist in the first place, and how did they come to play such an important role in society today?
Well, you know, my view is that the reason why associations have played such an important role over a long history is because they have played many roles and made many contributions, but they've always been about solving problems, going back to the very beginning. And the reason why they've grown is because people wanted to be a part of something larger than themselves, wanted to join with other people to try to solve problems, to try to address issues, to try to create benefits that they could enjoy, but that others could enjoy as well. And it's not business per se. It's not like a corporation, which has a very clear profit motive. Associations are part of a larger nonprofit sector, but those nonprofits, most of the nonprofits that exist today, are very small and often very local and very focused on specific causes. The associations we talk a lot about in our community are national organizations, international organizations, or state-level organizations that are doing very important work for different industries or professions. So I really believe very strongly in the purpose of associations as something that has been important throughout U.S. history and really on a global scale as well, but also thinking about it from an individual perspective and how it can bring such an important benefit to anyone who is a part of an association. They can find value in that experience and the relationships that they build through that involvement in the organization.
Well, that's a very good overview. When you reflect personally on your 30 years of experience working with them, tell us a little bit how your view of associations and the community has changed over that span of time.
For me, the pandemic was a watershed moment, as it was for our entire world, but for me, and just in my thinking specifically about associations, because I recognized at that time, what I was thinking at that time was that our organizations were going to have to fundamentally change to accommodate the world after the pandemic, or sort of after we went through all those difficulties in the earliest parts of this decade, and that we were going to have to be different because the previous pathways that we were on toward the future were gone the minute we went into lockdown. And I still think we're finding our way, even though we've moved past most of the worst of the global health emergency itself, we're still feeling those follow-on consequences of the pandemic and what it has meant to our society, to our country, and to every person really on earth. So I think my thought process has really shifted towards we need to see ourselves differently and our organizations need to function differently in order to figure out how we're going to play an important role in what happens next as we look toward not just the rest of this decade, which is sort of shifting now away from the 2020s and toward the 2030s, but longer term as well, how we think about what associations might do, how they might contribute to our world as we look toward 2050 and beyond.
I want to get back to one of your points that you made. It's about purpose. So why do you think associations need to reconnect with their original purpose, both short-term and long-term? Why is that so crucial? And how do we do that given everything's changed?
I think that, you know, for me, that original idea of solving problems, building social capital, helping to build relationships, helping to build capacity within communities, whether those are geographic communities or interpersonal communities or professional or industry communities, is absolutely critical as we look ahead toward the 2030s and beyond. I think the more that we can do now to get back to, so we're sort of renew that purpose of building social capital with intention, that's going to be extraordinarily important at every level of our society and including within our own organizations.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. In fact, hearing you articulate that, it really just underscores that it's really important to get back to that now, especially because of all the change and the shift. And I think that the purpose in problem solving and bringing communities together is needed now more than ever. So I really appreciate that overview and insight. I want to take a moment and step back to season two. So during that conversation, you had talked about the duty of foresight, which is extremely important and what you do a lot of your association work on. But you also discussed the STEEP framework, which stands for social, technological, economic, environmental, and political factors and forces shaping the world in which associations operate. So when you think about the future, tell us what your most significant concerns are for the association community.
You're right. I talked a lot about what I saw at that time around the STEEP factors and forces that were shaping things. And I would encourage people to go back and listen to that conversation as well. But what I also mentioned at that time was just not long after that podcast was posted that I had also written an article for Association Advisor on my three biggest concerns for the second half, in the second 60 months of this decade. And I think that everything I wrote about at that time is sadly is what's happening right now. And it's something that really concerns me because what I was seeing at that point in time, what I'm seeing come to fruition now are the issues of systemic upheaval in our society. We feel far more disconnected from each other probably than we ever have. That upheaval has intensified as a result of a variety of factors, both at home and around the world. That upheaval creates more systemic risks for our organizations. It puts everything we do in a broader sense of uncertainty. And that uncertainty can feel like risk, but there are actually, I think, more calculable risks that we're facing right now across all dimensions in our organizations. More risk, certainly around economic uncertainty and economic issues, more risk around environmental questions, more risk created by political factors. And really all of the STEEP factors and forces create new risks, and they are intensifying and accelerating. You know, I think in addition to the systemic upheaval, the systemic risks, it goes back to the systemic problems. Lots of organizations in our community have had sort of structural problems or systemic problems within their organizations that may be hard to solve. And so therefore, they haven't really addressed them. And now, a year later, since we had that last conversation, we're seeing, again, the intensification of those problems and the addition of new problems that have come about because of policy changes at the federal government level or because of shifts in the economic environment and other factors that are in play. So I think that my concerns are that we will not take the necessary steps to address the systemic upheaval within our own organizations and within our industries and professions and within society as a whole, that we will not take steps to try to evaluate and mitigate those significant risks, not just for ourselves, but for our successors. So yeah, I am concerned as we look ahead toward the 2030s that we're not really ready for what the 2030s are going to bring to us. And we've got to start taking action on that now and try to put some form of momentum into the problem-solving effort that will be required as soon as possible.
Well, and staying on that theme, when you think about looking ahead to a favorable future for associations, tell us what you think association leaders should be addressing. What is the most important question that they and we should be asking right now to work towards that future of favorability?
So for me, a favorable future is not necessarily the best case scenario. It's not necessarily a preferred future. It's a future that is better than other options. But when I think about a favorable future, and when I'm having conversations with association decision makers about a favorable future, I always encourage them to say, understand that your favorable future, two things that you have to keep in mind when you're considering what a favorable future might be. One is, it could easily go the other way. It's favorable, but it's not amazing. Mm-hmm. And so because it could easily tip in the other direction, you have to work at it. And that's the second point, is that no favorable future will just be given to you. Any favorable future is going to be hard-earned. There's going to be a lot of choices that have to be made. There'll be a lot of decisions. Those will be difficult decisions. There are no easy decisions from this point forward. That's been true for a very long time. So we have to look at it through the lens of favorability rather than this is the best case scenario for our organizations. I think that what goes into that, getting to a favorable future, is what I wrote about in the follow-up article to my concerns about the next 60 months, which is what we will need for the next 60 months. And really in that article, I articulated what I thought was going to be critical for our organizations to be able to adapt to what would happen in these second half of the turbulent 20s, as I refer to them. And the first is the idea of care over complacency, that we can't, and it kind of picks up on what I was saying a moment ago, we can't be complacent in looking around and seeing all the problems and say it's not our job to address them, that we're just going to stay in our lane. Secondly, it's about trying to build cooperation over competition. I think we've become more accustomed to looking at things through a competitive lens that isn't always the best thing for us to do. And competition is getting much harder for our organizations to really participate in, because the scale of competition has grown really far beyond the scope of what most of our organizations are about. When we look at innovation today, it's so technology-centric that, you know, really the vast majority of our organizations don't have the financial resources or the scalability to be able to compete in that kind of context. So instead, I think we should be thinking about how do we operate more as societal institutions that can advance cooperation within our professions and industries, within the ecosystems that operate across and within various industries and professions, and be the group that really facilitates bringing people together in more meaningful ways to solve problems and to address issues rather than trying to operate in a competitive way. There's so much conflict in our environment right now, so much sense of instability. And I think one of the things that associations as a favorable future could be doing is looking for ways to enable not only the cooperation that helps to solve problems, but the real collaboration that builds new possibilities, and to choose that over conflict, trying to make collaboration a basis for greater stability rather than just finding ways to add to that instability. I think we don't want to be a part of that. So I think there are some opportunities, significant opportunities in all that. In order to guide that thinking, last year, you'll recall, Christine, that we closed with a question instead of a book recommendation. But the question I gave at that time is the same question I would ask right now. What will our successors say about us? Because I think we have to begin to get comfortable with the idea that our decisions in 2025 and 2026 and the years to follow are going to be judged by those who will follow us, including and especially the people that we will never know personally. To that question, I want to add two others, which is, first, what do our successors expect of us? I think we've got to get a better handle on what those who follow us are looking for, right? And we have to get creative and understanding what that is, because those voices are not really represented in decision-making spaces within our organizations today. So it's not just what they will say about us, but what will they expect of us? And then I think the third point is, what will we do to earn the trust of our successors today? And that is not just about what we're going to build or contribute, but also what we're going to sacrifice. What are we prepared to give up in 2025, 2026, and beyond, to serve those who are going to follow us. So the more that we can put our focus on what we're doing for our successors, what they are expecting from us so that we can do the proper things, and then making sure that we're taking steps that actually earn or build trust with those stakeholders, I think those are the things we should be talking about more and more in our organizations as we begin to approach the 2030s.
Yeah, that's a lot of good insight and probing, thoughtful questions. You know, there's one thing you mentioned, and I wonder, it's worth repeating because I think it's so important. It's a favorable future is not handed to you. And that principle goes across pretty much any aspect of life, right? But what it really comes down to is what decisions you're making and are you challenging yourself? Because to kind of just be complacent or avoid the tough decisions and tough work to help shape a favorable future is something that we can't shy away from as leaders. It's our responsibility to do that. So I think that was a really important point that you made right at the beginning. So I hope that all association leaders take on that challenge to do that. You know, thank you for that. There's one other topic that I can't leave on the table because I know you have mixed opinions on it. And we talked a lot about it at the ASAE annual meeting CEO Power Breakfast that we co-hosted and moderated. And of course, that's AI. You've written about it. You've spoken about the impact of AI on both our world and associations. So I want to know what your advice is to associations as they consider AI and technology more broadly in the years ahead.
You know, at the end of August, we reached 1,000 days of ChatGPT.
Wow.
And the thing I keep thinking, you know, I've even said it in sessions is, what was everyone doing on November 29th, 2022? And I can say with certainty that most people were not pining for the arrival of ChatGPT
right. The
next day. I take that as an important milestone because it really was the start in many ways. I mean, those technologies, generative AI existed before that, but that was the start of the public's fascination with the generative AI technologies that have become so dominant. And, you know, in my article that I wrote about this on LinkedIn on the day of the milestone, you know, I laid out my concern that generative AI has created a lot more damage than it has created benefit for society. So my advice to association decision makers and really all association professionals, certainly boards have an important role to play in this, other decision makers, but this is a choice for everyone in our community to say, you know what, look at what is happening with AI with eyes wide open and do not allow your thinking about AI to be shaped fully by those who have a very clear agenda for its advancement. And I'm talking specifically about, you know, the companies themselves that are building AI tools, technologies, and so on, putting them out there for people to use. And I think one of the things that, and I've written, as you pointed out, a number of articles on this also for Association Advisor over the last 12 to 15 months. And some of the things that I've, you know, talked about or written about in those articles include, you know, we can't be using fear of missing out, FOMO, as a reason for doing this. We can't be tying this to our sort of infatuation with the idea of relevance. And we can't allow AI to disorient us. And it's much more important that we safeguard our shared humanity, defend our shared humanity, than it is to adopt AI, that we need to ask harder questions about what we're doing, why we're doing it. What does ethical, purposeful, and responsible AI adoption look like if that's achievable in our organizations? I think we have to have more critical thinking and less unquestioned adoption. Technology as a whole, from this point forward, is something we should really ask harder questions. Is technology always the right solution to every problem? Yes, it has a place to play, but how can we also think about the human solution that we might produce? And then how can technology support the human solution? So I'm not sort of saying technology is, we should just, you know, do away with it. I'm saying we have to be more thoughtful in our approach around how this goes across all of our organizations. And there are certainly a lot of people who are approaching it that way. I want to be clear that I see that. But I just think that these conversations are so weighty for us today and for our successors, because that's what really motivates me in all of this, is that we're making decisions right now around AI and other technologies that are going to significantly influence what we're leaving for those who follow us, for our successors. And we want to be sure that we're making good choices, not just for ourselves, but for them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That echoes a lot of what you talked about at the Power Breakfast. But I agree, we have to think about it carefully and intentionally. because you can just get tempted to follow along. But if you have to think about what does that mean for your organization? You know, as I said at the beginning of this episode, and you did deliver that you're going to challenge us to think differently. You certainly accomplished that in this episode. So thank you. We always appreciate your insights and your experience and the fact that you do come at almost every topic from a different perspective, and hence the challenging everyone to think differently. Well, as you teased already, this time you do have a book recommendation. So for those who tune in, you know we'd love to get a book recommendation from our guest and share their knowledge with everyone here. So do tell our listeners what book you have.
So, and I'm glad that we, you know, the previous question you asked me was about AI, because my book recommendation is also about AI, and it is called Empire of AI by Karen Howe. That's H-A-O. And Karen is an excellent writer. She's a journalist, but she actually started out as an MIT-trained engineer and has written for The Wall Street Journal and MIT Technology Review and Atlantic Magazine. And the book is a very long book, but very meticulously researched. And it's about OpenAI and particularly, but it really talked, it's really a book that focuses on really what's happening with all the AI companies right now. But again, with a lot of inside information, hundreds of interviews conducted with people who worked in OpenAI, either they were working at the time or previously worked for the company. And she makes a very powerful argument that these companies have become a new form of empire in our society, going back to the time of the British East India Company and its empire in service of the British Crown. And she makes a very compelling argument to say that those companies, much like other companies that were about empire in the past, you know, tried to take all the resources for themselves and claim that they always belonged to them, that they exploited labor to try to use those resources, that they did not necessarily share any of their own inside information with others, and that they would always try to set up a narrative between the good empire, which was them, and the bad empire. And in the context of AI, that bad empire, good empire narrative is really between the AI companies and what's happening with AI in China. And so the dynamics of that frame, I think, are very salient to what we see happening right now, and especially since we're seeing a lot more convergence of interest between the current government in the US and the AI companies. I think we have to pay very close attention to what's happening right now. And Karen's book is an excellent, excellent resource for shaping our thinking in a way that's going to be helpful to everyone in our community, especially to decision makers who are having to make very hard choices about how they proceed with artificial intelligence and really with all technology for the rest of this decade and beyond. So I highly recommend her book, and she's on a continuing book tour and she's doing a lot of talks. So you'll be able to hear her. If you look for her on LinkedIn, you can find more about that.
Well, that's great. That's a book I've not heard of. I'm definitely going to look it up. So that's The Empire of AI by Karen Howe. Perfect. Well, and speaking of LinkedIn, is that still the best way our listeners can connect and listen to you?
Yeah, people can connect with me. I have my own URL. It's jeffonlinkedin.com. And then obviously they're welcome to email me at jeff@foresightfirst.io.
Great. And we'll be sure to link a lot of the articles you referenced in this episode to the podcast episode. So as always, Jeff, thank you so much. It's always so informative when we get on these conversations. And I love you're like this wealth of vault of knowledge from your experience with associations. So thank you for giving us access to that. And we appreciate it.
Thanks, Christine. I appreciate it as well. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Association Advisor Podcast, brought to you by Naylor Association Solutions. To join our monthly newsletter, go to associationadvisor.com or just click the link in the show notes of this episode. Don't forget to follow us on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast so you won't miss an episode. See you next time.